States against DeSantis. Mr. Salerno.
Good morning to this honorable body. I guess was a little lucky in the sense that I got here early with a couple cups of coffee to hear Your Honor talk in the prior case about the jury instructions. That's the issue that I brought forth in this case. I'd like to, I think the brief covers everything that I wanted to cover, but I'd like to argue most specifically about the bodily injury jury instruction, which was tendered to the jury. This statute under which Mr. DeSantis, which, as the court can see from the brief, was a highly decorated police officer for a number of years and had risen from patrolman to assistant chief of police at some point in his career, saved people's lives and was a well-decorated police officer. The troublesome part of how the jury instruction was given and how it relates to the statute begins with a statute that is essentially a misdemeanor and a felony wrapped into one. Under 18 United States Code Section 242, a defendant can be sentenced up to 1 year unless bodily injury occurs, and in which case the defendant can be sentenced up to about up to 10 years. And in this case, Mr. DeSantis was sentenced well in excess of 5 years incarceration. I concede that, of course, the jury instructions taken as a whole must be reviewed with great deference, but the bodily injury instruction is not included within the statute. And so the government, in prosecuting the case, cited a federal case, which wasn't cited in the Fed Supps or in the federal appellate court. It was an express cite, and a jury instruction was given over my objection that said any injury that is painful and obvious, even if the victim does not seek medical attention, including a cut, bruise, physical pain, or any other injury to the body, no matter how temporary. The victim in this case testified that he immediately didn't seek medical attention, but that he suffered a headache. And then he later went to the hospital to check whether or not he had an infection. And that's exactly what we argued in our brief. In a sense, the jury was stuck with testimony concerning a headache that the victim suffered, and the testimony that he later went for medical treatment to see if there was some sort of an infection.
Well, that sounds like a sufficiency of the evidence argument and not an instructional argument.
Well, it is an instructional argument in the sense that if the jury sufficiently believed that he suffered a headache and sufficiently believed that he went to the doctor to see if there was an infection, the question is then, is that evidence, does it comport with the jury instruction, which it did in this case because the jury instruction was erroneous. So
this is a very common formulation of bodily injury for criminal statutory purposes, isn't it?
I wouldn't say common. I mean, the government cited two cases where it was accepted. I haven't found any other cases. And in the two cases, one case in the Bailey case, there was no objection made by the defense. And in the Meyer case, the defense asked for the state definition of battery, and the court said this isn't a state case, it's a federal case. And, of course, it wasn't the same instruction that was given in this case. Neither of those cases specifically gave the same exact instruction. The government also said in their brief that this court should look to the statute, and they cite four different statutes to look to for some guidance, 831, 1365, 1515, 1864. But there's a definition in those statutes that doesn't include language that was included in the jury instructions.
Isn't this a different argument than you made at the instructions conference? Weren't you arguing about the question of whether the injury was caused by the conduct as opposed to the nature of the injury?
No, I argued the causation and I argued the nature of the injury. And if that's in response to the government's waiver argument, once again, I came in the next morning and attempted to clarify the record because I felt that at some point there I did make the argument, but I thought maybe it wasn't reading correctly because we were having a lot of discourse back and forth, and asked the judge again if I could revisit and re-argue, and wanted to make sure that the judge was clear as to what my arguments were, and he stopped me and said, don't worry, all your arguments are preserved, all your issues are preserved concerning the jury instruction, and he wanted to go ahead, and I cited to that in my responsive brief where the judge says the instruction objections have all been preserved. And I said, Judge, I want my continuing objection, and I wanted to bring it to your attention again. So I don't think there's a waiver issue.
But it was you argued the definition of bodily injury.
I argued the definition of bodily injury. I argued causation, and I asked to revisit the issue the next morning. The judge came out and said, before the jury comes out, is there anything else that you'd like to discuss? And I said, Judge, I want to bring up this jury instruction again. And when I did on the record, he made sure that the issues were preserved. I don't know if that sufficiently answers the question. I hope it does. But the statute that that the government asked this court to look at, the statutes for guidance differ from the jury instructions in this case because the statutes have five provisions, A through F, which include cuts, abrasions, bruises, or disfigurement, physical pain, illness, impairment of a bodily function, or any other injury to the body, no matter how temporary. And this jury instruction states that even if the victim does not seek medical attention, which is not included in the statute, and any injury is included in this case, which it could have been the headache that the defendant complained about. In addition, the seeking of medical attention is not. Now, as this court can see, too, during sentencing, which is a separate issue, which is what's brought up in counsel's brief, I argued extensively the difference between bodily injury and injury because the government also suggests this court look at 1B1.1 subsection B, and that, again, differs with the jury instruction. It says that any significant injury that is painful or obvious for which medical attention ordinarily would be sought, and this instruction says whether or not medical attention was sought. So there's a wide variety of different arguments, and I think the jury instruction, because it doesn't exist in the statute and because it makes a misdemeanor a felony and because it subjects him to a greater sentence and because it doesn't comport with any case law that has been cited by the government, in this case should be looked at very, very significantly because it could have resulted in Mr. DeSantis' conviction based upon the testimony that the victim suffered a headache, and I'll reserve a little time for rebuttal if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. Salerno. Mr. Hoekstrom.
May it please the Court, my name is Eric Hoekstrom, and I'm representing the United States in this appeal. Our arguments are pretty fully stated in our brief, but I do want to respond to a couple of matters that were just raised by Mr. Salerno. In particular, I want to get to your question, Judge, about what was discussed at the jury instructions conference with respect to the bodily injury definition. And I submit that if the court reviews the record thoroughly, it will be evident that, in fact, at no point did defense counsel discuss or challenge the definition of bodily injury. There's a lengthy colloquy regarding the instruction related to the bodily injury issue, but the entirety of what defense counsel suggested to the court at the time was that it wouldn't be appropriate to use the phrase results in bodily injury, that instead the instruction should say causes bodily injury. At the end of all of this, the court said, you know, I'd like to keep it the way it is. Okay. And counsel's response was, thank you, Judge. Now, counsel just now is sort of attempting to shore this up by saying he came in the next morning and said, Judge, I just want to make sure I preserved all my objections. But what that is sort of ignoring is that he's obviously only preserving the objections that he's already made. Rule 30 requires that objections to jury instructions state the specific objection and the grounds for the objection. And counsel failed to do that in this case. If he was here arguing that the use of the term results in bodily injury and the instruction was improper, then this would be a different situation. But that's not the situation we have. With respect to the merits of the issue, in particular, the definition of bodily injury, counsel is correct that the statutes that we've enumerated, the four different federal criminal statutes that use that define this term bodily injury, are only constitute part of the instruction that the district court gave in this case. Specifically, one half of the instruction that the court gave mimics the statutory definitions listed in those four cases. The other part of it comes directly from the U.S. sentencing guidelines. In any case, the entirety of the instruction and the substance of the instruction has been approved not only by the First Circuit but by the 11th Circuit. Now, to my knowledge, this court has never specifically addressed whether Section 242's use of the term bodily injury is to be looked at the same way as in the other federal statutes, but I would note that, as the 11th Circuit pointed out in Myers, when Congress leaves a term undefined, they are presumed to have intended the meaning that has been read into the term by the law. And when at least two circuit courts have stated that this is an appropriate definition of bodily injury, and counsel has, as of now, still not offered any other definition of bodily injury that would lead anyone to believe that this is an erroneous statement of the law, then we have no issue here. And I guess finally I would also just get right to the prejudice issue, because even if there was some error, it's hard to see on the facts of this case how the jury could have been confused as to whether there was some form of bodily injury. The testimony was that the appellant took a video camera and hit the victim in the face with it, and then hit him on the head with it. The testimony was that although he didn't seek medical attention immediately, there was a visible cut on his cheek, and photographs of that were shown to the jury. If that's not bodily injury, then it's hard to see what bodily injury could mean within the meaning of the statute. If the court has no other questions, I will rest on our brief.
Thank you very much. Mr. Salerno.
I don't know if the government can now say that because they offered some evidence that if the jury instruction is erroneous, that the jury must have believed, or it's pretty much clear, that there was bodily injury. I mean, the question is whether the jury instruction given was correct or not. The jury instruction given does not agree concisely with either case cited by the government, and does not agree with the what's particularly troublesome is the testimony was that he suffered a headache and that he went in to see if he had an infection for medical treatment. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but what's particularly troublesome again is that there's no definition within the fabric of the statute, that the definition comes from a cited case doesn't even exactly agree with the jury instruction given, that the what's offered by the government as precedent for it are two cases wherein one there was no argument made and the other asked for a state definition of battery in a federal case that was rejected. And it does contradict 1B1.1B, which you can see during the sentencing phase of the case I briefed rather extensively. So based upon all of that, I believe that this jury instruction may have resulted in the conviction of Mr. DeSantis. We can't assume that the jury believed everything that this defendant or that this victim testified to, because the victim also testified about witnessing another victim receive a beating, and there was a finding of not guilty on that case. And I don't want to get into inconsistent verdicts, but you can't assume that the jury believed what this person said when the jury instruction didn't hone in. If the jury instruction would have said that if he had a mark on his face and there was a visible injury, et cetera, and defined it correctly, then you could say that that's what they found upon. But if the witness testified that he had a headache, that's the thrust of my argument, that a headache should not be enough based upon what the law would require. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.